Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
And welcome into the latest edition of Believe in Titans podcast. I am David Beauclair, joined by John Glennon, my partner at All Titans. At SI.com, you can find our work there, SI.com/NFL/Titans. And former Titans cornerback, and several other teams' cornerback for that matter, Denard Walker. Gentlemen, how are we?
Doing well.
Doing great.
Good to hear. We are recording this. It is June 2nd, which is a big day in the NFL world because it is now officially post-June 1st. Which means salary cap space, and specifically for the Titans, who gained an extra $9 million plus officially because they released Julio Jones with a post-June 1st designation. John Glennon, how important is that money? What do you think the Titans intend to do with it?
I think it's certainly important because the Titans were one of the teams that was closest to the NFL cap. I think prior to the Jones release, I think they were the third closest to the cap ceiling. And now I think they're 13th lowest in terms of cap. So certainly gives the Titans a lot more flexibility now. You know, some of that money is probably going to go to rookies to sign them. There's still, you know, a couple guys that still need to be signed. But certainly, you know, if there are still positions that need to be addressed and likely, you know, if you're the Titans, maybe those positions are on the O-line or at wide receiver. It gives you the option now of taking a look at some of the guys that are still left in the pool and also guys that may come available here closer to camp or even in camp. You know, if other teams cut veterans for cap reasons, you know, or as rookies come on, all of a sudden you're getting a few more free agents out there and you've got a little bit of room to maneuver now and maybe make some additions if you need them.
Yeah, Denard, this is an interesting time. I mean, Titans released Julio with a post June 1st designation, but now that we're actually past June 1st, other teams could make those sorts of moves. Is it too late to bring in a guy from an offseason perspective in terms of what he can learn between now and the start of training camp? Or if you're a veteran player, is this still a lot of time to, if you get signed, to get something done before the end of July here?
You still have a lot of time because you're still not in training camp yet. So if you look at a lot of the notable free agents out there, there are some big names that I think can be a huge addition to this Titans team. So it's never too late. You saw that with the Rams last year. I mean, look at their run to the Super Bowl. They added Von Miller late into the season. You're talking about Odell Beckham Jr., two guys that produce. And I think that was the biggest reason that they end up getting over the hump and getting to the Super Bowl was adding those two. So it's never too late. And when you look at this team and you look at Tennessee, there's still a lot of holes that need to be filled for this football team. And in particular, I'm looking at the receiving core. You got some big names out there, David and John. And one guy in particular that I like to pay close attention to is Will Fuller. I think he will be a huge addition to this team. It's never been a question about his play. It's always been about his durability. You're talking about a guy that's an explosive playmaker. And what I love most about Will Fuller is he's a veteran. He's 28 years old. So, again, once you bring him in, if you can get somebody, what I like to call a veteran, they can learn the playbook fast. It's just learning the terminology and just getting that down. I think he'll be fine. But, again, I like to see them make a move in free agency and bring in another top receiver. I think that'll be a huge addition to this football team.
Yeah, Will Fuller's a guy that, jumped out at me when I was looking at the list too, because you know, you do worry about his health. He hasn't played more than 11 games since his rookie year in the league, but what he does, what he's always been really good at, is he's a deep threat. And I think this team could use a little bit of that, a guy who you just say, look, you're either running the go or you're running the deep post, and that'll open things up for other things we're doing underneath there. And you wouldn't need him to play 50, 60 snaps a game when you're talking about, you know, the ideal lineup of Treylon Burks and Robert Woods and Kyle Phillips with Nick Westbrook-Ikhina rotating in there. I mean, there's plenty of guys to occupy snaps where you feel like you could limit Will Fuller's plays, his time on the field, his opportunities to get hurt, if you will, and he could maximize sort of that downfield ability that I think this receiving core is lacking right now. John Glennon, who on the list of available free agents catches your eye these days?
Yeah, certainly, you know, from that standpoint of the deep threat, I like Fuller, but for me, there are just too many red flags in terms of the injury. You mentioned the durability. I looked at the same number, you know, no more than 11 games for five straight years now. I think that's a little bit too much of a risk for, you know, how often have we heard Mike Vrabel talk about availability, availability, availability. And we've seen receivers in the last year or so, you know, be out a lot of times. I think that becomes even more of a concern. So, you know, they're the only one out there right now that is a huge game changer is probably, or potentially anyway, Odell Beckham Jr. He's going to command an awful lot of money. And I don't think the Titans have that kind of cash that they'd be able to afford Odell Beckham Jr. But, you know, if you're looking for a complimentary guy, I still think there are some decent veterans. Emmanuel Sanders, guy's 35 years old, yeah, still put up some pretty decent numbers last year, averaged about 15 yards a catch. Some other guys, too. You know, I don't see a ton of them because eventually you start looking at retreads like guys like Chester Rogers, you know, who was here last year. You know, had some contributions, but certainly was nothing special. And you don't go too far down the list before you start coming to guys like this. So, honestly, I think the pool is deeper in offensive linemen, you know, if the Titans choose to go in that direction, you know, to get a veteran tackle or to get a veteran guard. I think especially the tackles, you know, you look, the guy that really stands out to me is Darrell Williams, you know, former Buffalo guy who's played a lot of tackle. He's played some guard as well. Good versatility. He's been starting for years. He started last year for a good Buffalo team. You know, so I think he would certainly be a good fit if you feel like you still need to solidify that tackle spot. The only thing I wonder about, if you add a tackle now, are you pretty much saying to Dylan Radins and Nicholas Petitfrère, it's not going to happen, you know, for you this year? That's maybe the one question, and maybe you wait a while, maybe you wait till training camp and give these guys a shot before you sign somebody else.
Yeah, another one is Eric Flowers, a guy who has started at both guard and tackle in this league. You know, 101 starts to his credit. He's only 28 years old at this point. You know, maybe he could be your sort of safety net there at left guard, where you're looking for a replacement for Roger Saffold right now. That's another guy I know that Titans fans in general have kind of been looking at and kind of keeping an eye on for a little bit. Denard, anyone else in that group that you see there?
Yeah, just kind of piggyback on John a little bit. You know, I was kind of doing a little scenario and trying to figure out, you know, this receiving core, because there's been a lot of question marks, I'm pretty sure, in camp. But I was reading where it says that if Kyle Phillips comes out in training camp, let's say he wins that number one slot receiver, and let's say everything kind of pans out, and let's say you have Robert Woods on one side and you have Treylon Burks. Think about this, John and David. You have three receivers that haven't caught a pass for this team in a game. And then you look at the look at the tight end position. I know they brought over Austin Hooper from Atlanta in free agency, who they're high on. And then you go out and you draft Chig. Is it Onko? Is it Okonkwo? Pronounce that for me. Those not
Okonkwo.
I love that name. The fourth rounder out of Maryland. And then the only player that, if you think about it, that's five players right now that you have surrounding Ryan Tannehill, new players. And there's only two players that have any kind of familiarity with Ryan. If you look at it, that's Jeff Swain and that's Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. So again, you got a lot of new pieces to the puzzle, and this team got to figure out of this group, out of these five players, who's the playmakers here? Because, I mean, we talked about, if you look at the game against Cincinnati last year, I thought Cincinnati did a great job in bottling up Derek, but there was no, if you look on the perimeter game, they wasn't making any plays. I think Cincinnati did a great job in bottling up the receiving core and the tight end and the play of the tight end. So again, when you look at all of these new additions to this team, the question is for Tennessee, out of these five guys, who's going to step up? And where is the continuity? There's no continuity right now between this group. So they got a lot of work ahead of them. That's why I would love for them to bring in a good veteran of, you know, like Will Fuller, because he can really exploit the defense. I mean, that's his speed. His speed is his biggest asset. And then I want to go back and kind of piggyback, John. You think about Odell Beckham. I mean, he's coming off of an ACL injury. So, again, when a veteran, when you start getting up in your late 20s and you're talking about your early 30s, you really can't dictate what you're going to get. Sometimes you got to get in and just prove yourself that you're still worthy or you're still reliable in this league. So, again, I think this would be a huge asset with Will Fuller, because Odell just sustained that injury, back in February in the Super Bowl. So, again, he's I mean, there's a lot of rehab, and you don't know he's going to be ready for the season opener.
Yeah, you could sign him to an incentive heavy deal.
Yeah.
Maybe that would hurt your if things go great, it hurts your salary cap number for next year. You'd have to give a little bit of that back, but that's an interesting thought. There's one other name I want to throw out there that would be kind of a flyer, and it sounds ridiculous at first blush, except for the fact that you don't need this guy, which is why I think you would sign him. And I'm talking about Robert Kendiche, who was, you know, first round draft pick by Arizona in 2016. He's, you know, has come nowhere close to living up to any of the expectations for him. But you drop him in on this defensive line where you already have Jeffrey Simmons and Denico Autry and Naquan Jones and Tierre Tart, and you've signed Deshaun Walker, and you're, you know, you've got guys. To me, a guy like Kendiche, who's still only 27 years old, you bring him in. If he plays, or if he is what he's always been, then fine. You cut him and say, well, that was worth it. But if he's anything, even halfway like a first round draft pick, who, you know, you're talking about somebody who's getting 25 snaps maybe a game as part of a rotation piece. If those are 25 really good snaps a game, that could that could really make what's already a good unit a lot better. Yes, no, John?
I like the thought, the idea. I in my opinion, I think that the D-line right now, you know, may be the deepest part of this Titans team. You know, in addition to kind of the big studs of Autry and Simmons, you know, you've got a lot of really quality rotating pieces. You know, they signed a guy a little bit under the radar in DeMarcus Walker, who I think is going to be a pretty good addition. You know, the guy who chose the Titans over the Colts. And then they've really got two of the top undrafted free agents, defensive linemen, you know, Haskell Garrett and Jaden Peavy signed with the Titans too. And I think those guys are going to compete for D-line time as well. So certainly couldn't hurt to give another talented guy a try, but I really like the depth of that position right now.
Yeah. I believe I said Deshaun Walker there. I confused him with Deshaun Hand.
Marcus Walker, Deshaun Hand.
Yes, that's on me there. But going back to what Denard was saying about the wide receiver group and the pass catcher group in general, how there's so little familiarity with quarterback Ryan Tannehill and this offense and this team in particular, it leads into a good point. FootballOutsiders.com did their rankings recently of everybody's receiver groups. And footballoutsiders.com, for those who don't know, is one of those advanced stats websites. It, you know, you can really get down a rabbit hole there looking at some of their numbers. But their rankings come down to this. The Titans, in terms of their receiver group, are 31st out of 32 teams in the NFL right now, ahead of only the Chicago Bears. Is that Denard, do you think that's simply a product of familiarity, or are there legitimate talent questions that this team has to answer at that group right now?
Well, it's both. It's both. You have to look at it like this. Now, if you go back in 2021, and let's say if I'm a writer, John, you and David are both writers, and you try to tell me that this team, you have A.J. Brown on one side and you have Julio Jones on another. When you look at that combination, tell me, do you not, it's not just production that you see. You see two bona fide, but once we know he's going to be a Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, Julio Jones, but you see another player in A.J. Brown who's on pace. He's that electric of a player. That's production when you look at what they've done, the body of work. That's the way you're judged in this league. You're judged in this league about what you do on a Sunday or a Monday or a Thursday night. When you look at this team, let's just take, for instance, you take A.J. Brown. You're talking about in 3 years in Nashville, 185 receptions, nearly 3,000 yards receiving, 24 touchdowns. You're talking about a player that in 2019, his rookie year, went over 1,000-yard mark, comes back in 2020, matches it again. 2021, he would have had another 1,000-yard, but he missed the game. He had an injury. When you look at that, what do you see? I see production. I see a player that over a span of 3 years, he's been one of the most productive receivers since coming out of Ole Miss in 2019. Then you take a look and see who replaces him, Treylon Burks. There's a big asterisk because you don't know what you're going to get out of a rookie. Take Julio Jones, for instance. You're talking about one of the most prolific receivers in NFL history. You're talking about a two-time first-team All-Pro, a three-time second-team All-Pro, a seven-time Pro Bowler, two-time receiving yard leaders, 2015 and 2018, NFL 2010 All-Decade Team. You see production. Then you look at who comes in for Julio. You got Robert Woods. No disrespect to Robert Woods. He's one of the most talented receivers in the league, but he's 30 years old, David, and he's also coming off of an ACL injury. Out of those two, those are your two starters going into the season. That's what we're predicting. But then look at the guys that are behind them. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, very consistent, third-year pro. I tell you what, I love him. I love the way that he plays the game. Don't look at his stats, but – when you look at this receiving core, Dez Patrick, your fourth rounder, Cody Hollister, Racy McMath, Mason Kinsey, Kyle Phillips, you have a lot of unknowns. So if I'm a writer, I'm saying the same thing. What have these guys done to make me believe that they're a top five receiving core? They haven't done nothing as a unit. So until you put something on paper or you go out into the game and you be productive, that's the only way that you can change the narrative of this receiving core.
John Glennon, you wrote about the Football Outsiders rankings. What should people know? What should people take away from sort of that particular ranking right there?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Denard in that I think it's understandable because, well, I'll say this about the Titans receiving core. There is a high ceiling for this group. You know, if Robert Woods bounces back in this season, as well as we've seen him in the offseason so far, he seems to be, you know, on a great rate of progress. You know, if he bounces back well, if Treylon Burks, you know, is the kind of guy that you know, steps into the league like A.J. Brown, who he's been compared to often, you know, if Kyle Phillips, you know, shows the kind of promise that we've seen in the offseason. The problem is, though, that everybody has an if attached to them. There's question marks over every single guy. You know, maybe with the exception of Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, and he is not going to be a guy that gets you 60 or 70 catches. So there's a lot of ifs, and you know, as I say, if these guys come through, this group can be one of the you know, certainly in the upper half of the league, I would say. But there's an awful lot of ifs, and if the ifs catch up to you, you know, I can see why they're not rated too highly as of now.
And you've got a quarterback in Ryan Tannehill who threw an unusual number of interceptions during the regular season last year, and the three in the playoff game too. There is some uncertainty about him too. You'd feel better about this situation if it was this time a year ago and Ryan Tannehill had the 2019 and 2020 seasons he did. It's that adds, I think, to a little bit of the angst with that thing too. As we'll stick with wide receivers a little bit, because we have to talk a little bit more about Treylon Burks. We're in week two of phase three of the offseason program, which is still organized team activities. There's been another one this week that was open to the media. Again, Treylon Burks out there, stayed on the field, but wasn't exactly taking every rep that you would think he would possibly get. So, John, where are we? What do we know at this point? Anything more about Treylon Burks and what his situation is?
Yeah, I can't say we have a ton more knowledge at this point, but, I did think that Treylon Burks this day, this was the fourth time we've seen him since he's been a part of the club. And I thought this was his most active day. This was the day he missed the fewest amount of reps. But until he has an entirely full day, until he is doing what every other wide receiver and really every other teammate are doing out there, the question is going to be raised, and it has to be raised. Why wouldn't he? Why isn't he? And the Titans just won't give us certainty on that answer. And what was a little disappointing, I thought, this week was that Treylon Burks had his first opportunity to clear some things up by speaking to the media, and he was asked, certainly about his conditioning status and asked about the inhaler situation too. We go back to that first day when he was using an inhaler when he was having trouble breathing, and it raised the question of whether there's an asthmatic condition going on, whether there's some condition beyond just fitness going on, and really he offered no clarity on that. In terms of the inhaler specifically, he said just ask Coach Vrabel, and we know where that generally goes. I think one thing I will say, Mike Vrabel, at least this time around, referenced, rookies. He said, without necessarily naming Treylon Burks, he said rookies, they spend so much time working for the combine, working towards specific drills, speed drills in particular. Sometimes it can be an adjustment, weeks, months later, when all of a sudden they're back to doing football things instead of just doing combine type drills. And you got the idea, even though he didn't name names, that maybe that's what something that's going on a little bit with Treylon Burks too. But again, it remains a story if he's not doing what everybody else is doing until it's not a story.
And that's kind of the same thing that Vrabel said after the first rookie camp workout, which, I guess let's give him credit for consistency there in terms of the message, whatever the message is. And maybe you rely on Occam's razor there, which says the most likely answer is the answer, and maybe it's just an issue then of conditioning based on what he did or didn't do leading into the draft, which we have talked about here, and if it's simply that, he's not the first guy who has been through this. Donato, I want to ask you, when you were playing, what was your attitude towards talking about injuries or health issues? Did you see that it was, did you think it was maybe not worth it to talk about? Were you comfortable with it? How did you approach that?
Well, I wasn't hurt very, I was.
That's good news.
If I was, I would conceal it. I wouldn't tell the whole truth. But, guys, the way it works is, and I agree with John, when you're getting ready for the combines, you're doing mostly drills. You're not doing a lot of conditioning work. And what happens is sometimes it really is hard transitioning from kind of doing the little everyday drills and getting ready for the 40-yard dash, as opposed to you're doing, you know, a lot of interval work where you're doing all these sprints and all of this conditioning work. So again, he will still have about four weeks before training camp when they finish OTAs. A lot of times that's when coaches would say, listen, let's go ahead, get a lot of work in now. So when training camp comes, we're not having this issue. Because I didn't see that last year at Arkansas. I mean, I saw him in the fourth quarter. It looked like he got stronger as the game went by. So, again, I think that, you know, for me, no, it was something that I basically – it was a non-issue because I didn't have a serious injury, so I don't believe that I need to – I have to tell everybody what's going on with me. So, and coaches will sometimes protect players. Listen, if it's not an issue right now, listen, let's just kind of keep everything concealed and we'll tell them what they want to hear. That's just the way coaches will do.
One thing Mike Vrabel – go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Denard, I still think you're concealing. Do you have an injury you're not telling us about right now?
Hey, well, I'll tell you what. When I played at Denver, it wasn't an issue, but it was getting used to the altitude. And it took me about – I mean, John, it really took about 6 months to almost a year to get acclimated to that altitude. I've never experienced that before. I thought it was a hoax when people talked about, you know, when you go to Colorado that, you know, it's hard. It's something when you just can't breathe. And so I was a big time free agent. They paid me a lot of money, but they, hey, this guy can't get through, you know, the second drill without, you know, having to go sit him down for a little bit. But it wasn't unusual. You saw a lot of veterans, they struggle for a while until you can get acclimated to that environment. So once again, that's what Traylon's probably doing. He's trying to get acclimated. They know, hey, it might be just a little issue with his conditioning. Once these OTAs and everything is over, you can take that 4 weeks and basically say, listen, let's work on that conditioning part of the game. So this is not an issue when we're talking about getting into, you know, the first part of the season.
You wonder too how nervous he's getting, out of step he feels. It, you know, certainly he's a guy who's going to have high expectations for himself. He, you know, he wants to come in here and make a good impression. And you wonder, you know, just is he able to just compartmentalize that and say, okay, this is my situation. This is what I have to do to get where I need to be. Or is it sort of a constant state of, you know, goodness, I got to catch up, which I think can be dangerous because that's how you can hurt yourself too. If you're not careful by trying to do too much or to overcompensate for this, that, or the other thing. One thing that Mike Vrabel did say that actually, I guess, shed a little light on another situation was he talked about last year's second round draft pick, Dylan Radins, and said he is doing most of his work or a majority of his work at least at right tackle, which, you know, presumably he is the leading candidate to be the starting right tackle this year after a rookie season in which he was inactive a number of times, did start one game at left tackle against San Francisco late in the year when Taylor Lewan couldn't go, but practiced at multiple positions all season, seemed to be a guy just who didn't have a spot. So John, I'll come back to you. Is this good news? Is this a significant development that Mike Vrabel seems to look at Dylan Radins as a right tackle right now?
To me, I thought it was a rather significant statement simply because there has been no statement previously that gave us any leaning any direction aside from he's a versatile guy, you know, we're working him at guard, we're working him at tackle, yada yada. So when Mike Vrabel actually said we've been predominantly working him at right tackle, to me that you know, that's a kind of a big deal, and I think it's a good thing. You know, the more he could, in my mind, that he can play at one position, I think it's better for him, you know, because he doesn't have to keep working back and forth through two different skill sets, you know, whether it's a left guard or whether it's a right tackle. So that helps that he kind of, you know, defines his role a little bit more. And I think, you know, the offensive line too, you know, we always hear about how important offensive line continuity is, you know, and if you're potentially thinking of Dylan Radins as a right tackle, you know, the more time he can spend there and eventually if this continues into training camp, you know, the longer you can get continuity as a starting offensive line, that will help as well. But, you know, as I wrote about this today, David, as you know, on SI.com, I think the bigger question now, even if we know, or even if there seems to be an indication that Raiden's is working at right tackle, we still don't know for sure, is he good enough to be a starter? And, you know, no one is right now pounding the table, you know, coaches or teammates or anything, and say, this guy is without question, he's our guy. You know, there's just not that evidence that we saw during his rookie season or, you know, in limited time here in the off season. So that to me is the bigger picture question now.
Denard, I'll ask you this. Are you of the mindset that it's better to identify your five starting offensive linemen early in the off season and let those guys work together for weeks and months at a time, or is it okay to keep playing with the combination into training camp and even into the preseason a little bit?
Well, it depends on the coach. You know, what you're trying to do at this stage with OTAs, you're trying to build some continuity with, you know, especially with your offensive line. You got five guys and you need them to mesh well together. And you think about Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel comes from that New England pedigree. And when you first think of that New England pedigree, you think about versatility. The more you can do for Bill Belichick, the more that creates longevity. You're talking about John Robinson. I believe he also comes from that mold, that Bill Belichick system. And I know one thing about Bill Belichick is that he doesn't want one player at one position. He moves guys around. He takes defensive guys. He takes linebackers and put them at defensive end. He takes defensive ends like Mike Vrabel played and put them at tight end. Versatility is the key. And I know one of the things we talked about is the third rounder, Nicholas Petit-Ferrari. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name.
Very nice.
I tell you what, yeah, that's a hard last name. Some of these last names I'm going to have to work on. But one of the things you loved about Nicholas, that when he was coming out of Ohio State, you're talking about the versatility that he can play left or right. That's what you want to see in your offensive line. When you get to the NFL, especially the way offensive line play is today, you want to see if you have a guy that can also play tackle, he can play guard, he sometimes can go in and play center. The more you can do, that creates a longer career for you in the National Football League. You don't want to be one-dimensional in this league. And that's what I love about Dylan. Dylan last year showed that he was a starter in this league because he started for Taylor in that San Francisco game, and he went up against arguably the best defensive end in the league by the name of Nick Bosa, I believe.
I've heard of him.
And I'll tell you what, he played his behind up as a rookie going against probably the most dominating defensive end in the league. Nick Bosa last year was on course to what, to set a single season sack, all these sacks that he was accumulating. And then what happened? Dylan went into that game and shut him down. I mean, I know Nick had some plays in there, but that's what you want to see. That was a rookie. So what is he doing? He's evolving. And I was reading where Todd Downing, he showed a vote of confidence in Dylan and saying, listen, he's more mature this year. He's taking another step. He's taking another element to the game. That's what you want to see every year from a young guy. You want to see, is he evolving as a player? And Dylan, he showed last year that he is capable of being a starter in this league, because when you can put a guy – especially at the left tackle position, and he can go against one of the best in the business and hold his own, then yes, he deserves a chance to, earn that start to be the starting tackle on the team next year. And again, you don't know where he's going to play in guard. We don't know the situation with Aaron Brewer and Jamarco Jones. That's a battle that we're going to have to pay close attention to. But one thing I do love, before I'm going to say this, John and David, I love the versatility of these offensive linemen. The more you can do in this league, that creates a longer career for you in the National Football League.
Yeah, no one would say that Raiden's graded out at 100% in that San Francisco game. But the one thing that you did like is that he battled. He looked like, you know, he was going to give it his all on every snap that night. I remember coming away from that thinking, okay, maybe this kid's going to be all right eventually. Anyway, I talked to him last week after the OTA and, you know, he was asked a couple of us asked him about the right tackle job and everything. I there was a part of me that I would have liked to have heard him say, I absolutely want to be the starting right tackle for this team. I'm doing everything I can to earn that job or whatever, but he didn't, you know, he did the team guy thing and said, look, the five best offensive linemen are going to be the offensive line. And if I'm one of them, then great. If not, I'm going to be pushing the guys who are starters. I almost want to see a little more killer instinct from him in that regard. But, you know, everybody's wired how they are wired. And that's, you know, I think that was probably a pretty consistent answer with how Dylan Radins is wired. But, you know, this is not going to be the last time we are going to address this subject. I'm sure we will look at it increasingly as we get into the training camp in the preseason, because it is interesting. It is important for this team that they get this offensive line sorted out and find a good productive five. But, that is going to be it for this particular episode. It's the time goes quickly as we're doing this. I do have to say one more thing, a quick salute to quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick, who played for 9 NFL teams over a 17-year NFL career, has announced his retirement, started 9 games for the Titans in 2013, and had one game where he set career highs in attempts and completions in a loss to Arizona. He was always exciting, if not the most productive or successful quarterback of all time, and Titans fans saw that in the 1 year he was with this team. So with that, we will say good night. Denard Walker, thank you as always.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Thanks, John.
John, thank you for your time and your insights as always.
All right. Thanks, guys.
And we will be back next week with another edition. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Believe in Titans Podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.